This is the MLWRadio.com Network.
Hello and welcome to yet another episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news notes, reviews and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling that is circling around the G1 climax around this time of the year. And we are back to talk about three shows. That's night 13, 14 and 15 from Ehime, from Osaka and from Hamamatsu. Dylan, how are you doing?
Hasegenaki, Soraga Ikaru. I'm doing great, Striga.
Oh, man.
I feel like this has been one of the best stretches of the G1 thus far in the tournament, and I can't wait to talk about it. I was super hyped to do the show. You caught me a little off guard, I'm not going to lie, when you messaged me to do the show, but you were on point on this day, and I'm always on point. I'm always ready to go, even at very weird times.
Yes, you are.
But that is a shoot.
That is.
But
you know, it's a really great day here in Germany. We're recording this at 2 p.m. German time here, and I think it's 8 in the morning where you are, or something like that.
Yes, 7 in the morning.
Yes.
You know, we just had some family come over yesterday, and I made sure to brag to them that I was on this show and that I'd actually accomplished something in my life. So they were all very proud of me for being on the Eastern Lariat. A good thing about my family is if I speak any of my other languages, they're always really impressed. So I made sure to show that off as well. So if we've got any new listeners, it's probably one of them. So shout out to the family, Justin, Donnie, and we're having some great times over here. And I'm really excited to do the show too. It's a lot of happy stuff right now.
That's true. Shout out to the family as well, and let's just get right into this because we have a lot to cover here from these three G1 shows. They, for the first time ever, they ran a G1 show in Ehime. They have done shows in the building they ran before, but never for the G1 climax, so they drew 2,130 fans for the show in the building called the Item Ehime on Friday, and the Friday G1 matches started with a banger. They started with Kota Ibushi versus your man, Dylan, Yuji Nagata.
Yeah, and it was a really good match, as expected for both of these men in the G1. You know, I really liked how they started off, and Nagata's done this with a couple of different opponents. At the start of his matches, you know, he does some different things with people, like, say, this match with Goto and this match with Ibushi as well. They started off more grounded, trying to grapple well, and that led to the rest of the match and how it built up. And it wasn't as the greatest match of either men's tournament, but they both did some really good stuff. And Nagata even got the kick out of the last ride, and they've really tried to solidify this knee strike of Ibushi's as his finisher going into the last stretch of the tournament, and they did a good job of it. No complaints at all about this match. Some really good stuff for both men.
Right. Nagata again throwing it all in here against Kota Ibushi.
Yep.
What in the end cost Nagata here was that I wouldn't say he underestimated, but he didn't take into consideration how athletic Kota Ibushi is, because when Nagata was going for his German suplex, Kota Ibushi countered that German suplex, landed on his legs, which then led to the finish of this one. So very good opening match for the G1 climax here on this show. Nagata still at the bottom of the block with 0 points at this point in time. Kota Ibushi moving to 8 points. Someone who moved to 8 points as well was Bad Luck Fale, who defeated Tomohiro Ishii. And Dylan, when the match was over, I was absolutely 100% sure that this was the best match Bad Luck Fale ever had with a wrestler that's not called Tanahashi, Okada, or Nakamura.
Wow. That's a heavy praise here for this match. And I thought it was pretty good. Definitely not bad. You know, I really liked what Ishii brought to the table. He's always... he's another one of those guys that I brought up this point about Tanahashi earlier in the tournament, is that he has a good way of selling while on offense, if that makes sense. And Ishii showed it again here. It showed a lot of heart in this match. Fale did good. I think this was probably Fale's best match of the tournament, I would say. I'd have to think about his greatest match overall, because he had some good ones with Okada as well.
Yeah, that famous match with Nakamura. The right, and there was the, and then again there was the final of the New Japan Cup with Shibata.
Yeah,
that was very good as well. Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah, with Shibata. Right. That was a good one. Yeah, this was a good match though. Definitely the best of the tournament, I would say, this or Yoshihashi. But it was still pretty good. I wouldn't say it was a great match though.
Yeah, pretty good match, I would say too. What the point you made about Tomohiro Ishii is absolutely true, and we're going to talk about that when we talk about the match with Tanahashi later on. You talked about the selling Ishii does, and Ishii does a lot with his facial expressions, and you wouldn't expect him to, because he's just the stone pitbull guy, but he's still able to tell a great story just with the facial expressions he does and with everything else he's able to do in the ring. They did some great spots here in this match. Fale worked extremely hard. What I noticed during this tournament, especially during tag matches, Fale is so athletic for the size he is. Without any problems, he takes, for example, clotheslines over the top rope, which would be a problem for other guys his size. So I think he really proved to a lot of people during this tournament, because I've read it a lot, that people really begin to understand what he brings to the table in this tournament.
Yeah. You know, I really like a lot of stuff too. And he sold pretty well for Ishii when it was time for Ishii to get the heat on him, and I like that. Ishii actually even did, and I like how Ishii changed up his offense too, just to praise Ishii some more here. He actually hit kind of a triangle, locked in a triangle, a choke at one point to an arm bar.
Yep.
And that led to Fale making the ropes. I think he even hit nearly a shining wizard at one point. He did it,
yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a shining wizard style move. And that was really cool.
Shining Enzuigiri, which we'd call it.
Yeah, the glimmering warlock.
Right.
Almost. very much fits Ishii's persona as well as a Dungeons and Dragons inspired character. But no, yeah, it was a good match, I thought. Fale, if you get him again there with the right guy, he can hold it down. And I thought this was a good match. Nothing really bad to say about this one either.
Right, so next up, Hiroki Goto also moved up to 8 points when he defeated Yoshihashi with the GTR. Thought this was a pretty good match here in the mid-card of the G1 singles matches. Nothing special. Don't have a lot to say about this match, actually.
Nah, I actually thought it was pretty disappointing. While still being about the same level as the last match, I thought this was kind of a disappointing match. You know, but they worked hard. I thought there was a lot of good effort here, as Yoshihashi usually brings to the table. And he also has shown that against Ishii as well as Goto, which are both kind of like, it's kind of like the same dynamic they have. It's the big brother versus Yoshihashi. And they both did their roles well. I think maybe this would have came across a little better earlier in the tournament before Yoshihashi got eliminated and before he had his match with Ishii. I think opinion on this match would be a little higher. But seeing it now, it was just kind of like that again, and you know, and like I said, it just didn't have importance at this point.
It didn't
feel like it had. There was no sense of urgency or anything to it. It was just kind of a solid match, but not special.
Neither one of those guys feels like he's getting anywhere in this tournament. So
no,
it was just go out there, do the match, go to the back, and that's it.
Yeah, no, I think you're totally right. There, especially at this point in the tournament, it just felt like. And Goto's more of a middling person. He's still very much alive at this point, but Yoshihashi was already eliminated, and just felt like, you know, like I said, they did try. There was effort there, I feel like. I think this would have came across better earlier in the tournament. But it didn't have any sort of juice or sense of anticipation or anything like that from the crowd. Like you said, it was just a solid match with no. It was like a bowl of ice cream with no sprinkles on it,
yeah.
Or a chocolate syrup. It was just ice cream.
So, semi-main of this show was Tetsuya Naito going over Zack Sabre Jr., Zack staying at 8 points, and Tetsuya Naito breaking out of the pack of those guys with 8 points, going up to 10. 14 minutes, 20 seconds, Naito beat him with the Destino, and have you noted that Zack Sabre Jr. was the first guy in this tournament who fell to the first Destino in the match? While the other guys, before they took modified versions of Naito's Destino, for Zack Sabre Jr., after 14 minutes, the first Destino was the end for him here.
And after he took a lot of the match, too,
yeah.
Leading up to this. So it was just kind of an out-of-nowhere, kind of, not a completely out-of-nowhere, but definitely Sabre was on offense a lot more than Naito in this match.
Yeah, did a lot of his submission moves, and there was this great sequence just right before the finish where Zack did multiple roll-up moves to almost get the victory over Tetsuya Naito, but then the Destino happened and that was it.
Yeah, he's looking for the PK too near the end, and Naito did a great way of avoiding that, and that led like right to the Destino, as you said. It was a good match, too. Not in the top tier of the tournament, but maybe the match of the night. You can make the argument, maybe.
Yeah.
But to me, Naito, again, and he just seems kind of like, I don't want to say unmotivated, but I think this could have been better, too, to be honest with you. I don't know if this would have taken place. I think the other one would have been a lot better earlier in the tournament. This one, I don't know, but I feel like maybe it would have been. But I think it could have been better. But it was still a good match, definitely along the same lines of the opener. But the opener just had, it felt like there was a lot more juice to it, if that makes sense.
You talked about sense of urgency when we talked about Goto and Yoshihashi. If you take out of consideration that Tetsuya Naito is at 10 points right now, it really wouldn't feel like that he's on the top of his block. Because just as you just mentioned, I don't know what it is exactly, but I don't get this big-time feeling for his matches in this tournament as well.
Yeah, I know. And it's becoming a problem with some other people in his own faction that we may talk about in a little bit who really can definitely have that vibe for their matches. And I'm totally with you on that point. I think throughout this tournament it's been a problem. I haven't really been impressed with him in this tournament at all. I think Zach's continued his really strong run. But that was a good point about the Destino, the first Destino, and I hadn't actually even took note of that, but when you say it, it actually makes sense, and it's going to lead into, again, what we'll talk about in a second with Zack. But I think it just shows where he's at in the slotting right now in New Japan, but his performances continue to be really strong, I feel like, and I really like his style. I think he, as everyone has said, has added something different to the tournament.
Very different, and I think the fans are really taking... Yep. To him as well, because during this match, you could hear that the fans were really buying his near falls, and they are buying his submissions, because the submissions have been successful for Zack before in the tournament. So they did a very good job with Zack up until this point. And I don't want to sell Naito too short, because he has had good matches in this tournament. It just doesn't feel like he might be going to the finals. That's just the issue I have.
Well, we'll see. We'll see how that plays out. Like I said, yeah, he's definitely had some good matches. He's kind of had an up and down tournament, I would say.
Yeah. So, main event of that show, moving along with Tetsuya Naito, Hiroshi Tanahashi is also at 10 points here in this block at this point. Defeated Togi Makabe, who remains at 6, 13-35 with the High Fly Flow. I would say the usual Tanahashi versus Togi Makabe match. Lots of brawling by Makabe. He almost got in his Spider German suplex to do the King Kong knee drop afterwards. That didn't happen. Tanahashi caught him with the high fly flow standing, with the regular high fly flow. And that was it.
Yeah. Really the same Makabe match as you're going to get most of the time, I feel like. And it was fine for what it was. The crowd was invested in this, yeah. In both of these men. So you had a really average match, ultimately, but nothing that I'm going to go too crazy about. It was basically lived up to my expectations. And Tanahashi continues to really put in that effort, and I appreciate seeing that, despite how injured he is and everything. He always gives the fans his best, especially when he's in the main event. So no real complaints, but definitely not anything you're going to be thinking about two shows from now.
Don't think so. That was the Block A show here from Ehime. The show on Saturday, August 5th, came from Osaka, the Osaka Prefectural Gymnasium right now, under his sponsorship name of Ideon Arena Osaka. 5,490 fans, a completely sold-out place, sold out 25 days in advance, I think, which just shows how strong of a market for New Japan Osaka is. But it even topped last year's G1 Climax show, which, if you look at the card of last year's Osaka G1 show, last year's show had maybe the stronger card than this year's, but this year's did a much, much, much stronger advance sales. So this just goes as a feather into New Japan's cap, and also, of course, as a feather in the cap of the guys headlining this show, because this show was headlined by Evil versus Okada and Juice Robinson versus Kenny Omega. But let us start from the beginning. I want to talk briefly about the opening match here, because Chase Owens beat Katsuya Kitamura in 5 minutes with the package pile driver. I thought Kitamura did a good job here. It kind of looks weird that Chase Owens is able to do this package pile driver move on this big guy, doesn't it?
You know, I agree with you on the package pile driver, for sure. That's definitely kind of a weird thing. And we were talking about this, me and some of my friends were talking about this. It's like, Kitamura, I feel like him, they just kind of stick him in this Young Lion spot, but they could be more creative how they do it. Like, basically, let me try to explain this the best way I can. As a Young Lion, his strikes have a certain level of effectiveness, and I feel like when he comes back, his strikes will have a much greater level of effectiveness while still kind of being the same. And I don't like for his look, I don't think that works. I think they could tell stories about him losing because he's not skilled enough and he's too green.
Yeah.
Not necessarily that he can't, that he still could be a heavy hitter but still lose, if that makes sense.
Yes.
And I don't think they really get that over.
He could, for example, lose to pinning combinations that he's not used to. Like, for example, when he's in there with a Zach, he used to lose to the European clutch or something like that, rather than losing to this kind of... It's a power move if you do it with Katsuya Kitamura. Kind of the same goes for Tomoyuki Oka, who on the show from Hamamatsu, he lost to David Finlay, who did the Prima Nocta on him. So you could tell a similar story with Oka. But still a good little match here in the opening.
I kind of like Chase Owens. He's not too bad.
He's in a good place here, definitely.
Yeah.
The G1 matches on this day started with Toru Yano going over Tama Tonga in 3 minutes with a cradle. I actually liked this one because Tama Tonga almost copy Toru Yano. He chased him at the start of the match. He tried to almost copy everything that Toru Yano does in his matches. But of course, you can't be the master. Toru Yano is the master thief. And he got the win over Tama Tonga here. Was what it was, I guess.
My question is, where was the DQ in this match?
Right, yeah.
Where was the DQ, Strigger? Like, that's what I was wondering as all this was going on. We've seen in previous matches how a DQ could come into play, but that seems to have disappeared in this match. I don't know. I was very confused by this.
Yeah, I can't explain that either. I guess somebody has forgotten about that.
I think a lot of people have forgotten about that in this company. But yeah, let's move on.
let's move on. The next match up here for the G1. That's a Block B show, and we should take into consideration that this was a Block B show. Satoshi Kojima got his first victory in the G1 Climax, defeating Zanada, who stays at 8 points here, 12 minutes with a lariat. Thought this match was pretty good. Nothing too special, though. Just two guys working hard. I thought Zanada, the story of this match was Zanada was so sure he would get his finishing combination in with Kojima, but Tenzan was so much of a cheerleader at the outside that Kojima was able to get up after Zanada had him in the skull end and was going for the rounding body press, that Kojima was able to move and then hit the lariat for the win here. Man, Zanada, in the end, didn't look really good here.
Losing to Kojima?
Yeah, the way he did.
Yeah. Just a simple lariat. This was a really kind of... We've talked about this throughout the tournament. There seems to be a theme of having one match that's kind of like very basic.
Yeah.
And just to be simple, just to be solid and just put it on the show. And I think this was that match. But they did it good, and I kind of... I don't want to say pop because or anything like that, but I kind of like that Kojima finally got a win here. I don't know about Sonata, when it comes to him and his run in this tournament and where he's going. There's something missing with him, in my opinion, and I think maybe they think that too with this loss to Kojima.
Something is missing, and everybody else was able to defeat Kojima,
I know, and there seems to be a couple of stories being told like that with some interesting people in this tournament, but maybe we'll get to that later.
Yeah, maybe. So next up, Michael Elgin defeated Minoru Suzuki. Elgin at 6, Suzuki at 8. 11 minutes. Elgin was able to beat Suzuki with a regular Elgin bomb without the drop into the corner. That was pretty strong, I thought. What was strong also here in this match was that they really kind of rebuilt. I used the term rebuild for the lack of a better term. Rebuilt Elgin from his loss to Toroyano on the Block B day prior to that by really overcoming the Suzuki-gun odds on his own. Suzuki had Taichi and El Desperado with him, and Elgin was able to chase them off on his own, did his impressive power moves where he does a Samoan drop and a follow-away slam at the same time with both guys, then was able to defeat Suzuki. That was good, but the match overall didn't really do anything for me.
I'm so over Suzuki and all of this, and all of his wrestling, with or without Suzuki-gun. It's him, like, that is the problem with all of this. I didn't like anything about this match. I don't think that helped him at all. We saw it earlier with Goto overcoming the odds with Suzuki-gun. It did nothing, because it's just stupid. That's the problem. No matter what you do, at the end of the day, this is not good. Like, there's nothing to be said positive about it. Elgin, I will say this. Despite his questionable loss and questionable booking, I think they've actually done an okay job, especially considering my expectations. I figured he would not have a good record, but they've still given him wins over two champions, Suzuki and Omega, in this tournament. So that would be that. I think that's good for him. I think that's, they haven't completely left him out of the cold, even though they've had him lose a lot, and they had him in a really, really bad match versus Yano. They kind of sold him out, but they've done an okay job with him. But I did not like this match.
Yeah, he could still be, for example, in a Kurken Hall headlining spot with the Suzuki. With the Omega, I think the match will be on a bigger show than a Kurken Hall show. So, guess that's a good point you just made here about Elgin. On the final day of the G1 Block B matches, he's facing Juice Robinson. That's going to be interesting. And Juice Robinson, in fact, was able to upset Kenny Omega here in the semi-main event of this G1 show, which caused Kenny Omega to remain at 10 points, Juice Robinson moving to 4. The match went 15 minutes, and Robinson was able to win the match with an impressive roll-up, I thought, because it looked like Kenny Omega was able to hit the Katayoko no Tenchi. But just in the last split second, Juice Robinson was able to roll through and get the cradle on Kenny Omega, and Kenny Omega was so surprised. He sold it so well in the end that he was totally caught off guard that somebody is able to counter his big move. So I thought that was a very good finish.
Oh, great finish here, both in booking and in execution. This match climaxed, no pun intended, perfectly in this match, and I loved Juice here all around.
Yeah.
Still doing his limping entrance, the limping around entrance. He has a lot of babyface fire that has been almost lost through time with a lot of people. He's almost kind of a throwback character in a lot of ways, throwback babyface character, and it so works for him. When he got this win, this crowd loved it. Great ovation. Just a huge win for Juice here. You have to consider this a really, really successful tournament for Juice.
Yeah.
Possibly more than any other person on this roster. I think he has been the one who's benefited most.
Yeah, he's made the most of it, definitely. And if you look at the crowd, and they've saved this victory up for the Osaka crowd. He won his first match and then went onto a losing streak. And the people anywhere were really longing for a victory. Oh. They were longing for a victory. And then they did it here in Osaka with one of the most rabid crowds they have in New Japan. And it just worked perfectly. The match was great. The finish was great. Both guys worked extremely hard and sold so well for each other. So just a win-win situation for both guys, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I can't say enough about Juice and his G1 run here. Definitely been one of the highlights of Block B. And again, you know, Omega, he has another potential opponent, I feel like, down the line that they've set up here, which I liked. It was very unexpected. I think it's very interesting that the U.S. champion has lost two North American wrestlers, but no natives thus far. I think that's interesting booking. I don't know what to take from that, but Juice was the story here, in my opinion, and he did a great job, as he has usually done. Definitely one of the best Omega matches, and honestly, I would put this as the best Block B match for one match, until the next match.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I can totally see that, because this one was really great, but the next one, really, man, the next one, King of Darkness Evil. Let's talk about Evil for a second before we go through the match. Because that's a point I made on Twitter. I looked back at some of the promo videos they did for Evil when he first, well, made his debut, because Watanabe returned and he became Evil, and Evil made his debut. So the first couple of promo videos they did for Evil were really cheesy. Can't really say anything else. And this gimmick.
Go to hell. Remember,
yes, go to hell. Go to hell, Okada.
Yeah. No, go to hell, Goto. Right.
And this gimmick, if you just look at it plain and simple, this is just an incredibly silly gimmick. And for a lot of guys to be stuck with this gimmick, that would be total hell. for Evil, whatever this guy has done, he made this gimmick his own, and he makes it work. He still looks goofy when he comes out with his with his attire, yes. The finger lasers have been over from day one. That is something to be said. But he still looks incredibly silly when he comes out. But when he's in the ring, he's just able to connect with the audience. And the audience, I think they love Evil at this point. When you look at Western fans, a lot of Western fans love Evil. And he is, unlike Zanada, I think the company really is 100% behind Evil right now.
You know, I think there's three words to describe him, and you got to say it with me here. Everything is evil.
Yes.
That's right. I totally agree with you. When this guy debuted, I was watching the show, and I just thought he was a total joke when he came out. Yeah. I was like, this is never going to work. And he wasn't that good when he first started.
Yeah,
I was like,
true.
Man, I really hate this guy. Like, he really sucks. But somewhere along the line, he really improved in ring, and I still don't like him coming out with the toy scythe and everything. I think if they just stopped that tomorrow, I would not lose a wink of sleep over it, over any sort of storyline inconsistency. And I think we may be headed that way, as this match signified that big things are ahead for Evil. When he's in the ring, I think he really is. He's been probably my favorite person overall in Black Meat. Despite match quality overall aside, I think he really just rocks it every time he gets in the ring. I maintain that Ingobernable's gimmick holds him back. I've said this many times before. But in the ring, I think he has a huge upside and is already really strong, to be honest with you, and one of the best performers in the company, actually, through this tournament. I really like what they've done with him booking-wise. I called this very quickly after the first show, as I noted his new music, and after he was the last guy profiled in Block B, I thought that may be a sign of big things to come. I wasn't expecting him to get Okada's first loss. I was surprised here, and pleasantly surprised, because this was a really strong match, definitely one of the best in Block B. I think, and Okada's had a great tournament too, not to take anything away from him, but Evil to me really always stands out in the ring with something he does. Like you said, you mentioned the crowd connection, the connection with the company that they're behind him. He has done great in this tournament. There's really no way around it. I love this match, you know, and the problem with this here, and I was actually notified of this on Twitter by an anonymous source. But they told me not to let you try to put over what a big win this was with Evil. They wanted me to remind you of his loss to Shibata and trading back the NEVER title, and that the follow-up is very important too.
Yes.
Which is true.
Yes.
But I will say this. Let me say this. I think that they're on a really good path with Evil right now in this tournament. I think they've definitely made him with this win. This win was so huge, Okada's first loss. They built Okada up so much that this win really means a lot.
Yes, definitely. You know? And you know, last year, Zanada beat Tanahashi. No, last year, Zanada beat Okada on the first day of the G1 Climax.
He beat Tanahashi.
That's right. Oh, yeah.
Bar Fuji faced Okada the first
time. Oh, yeah. That's totally true. But
he beat Tanahashi.
But still, beating Tanahashi at that point was huge for Zanada. They didn't follow up on it, however. But this time here around, they built up Okada to be almost invincible in this tournament. Even though he has his holding on to the wrist thing, he was portrayed as being almost invincible. Because nothing anyone has done so far was successful. But when Evil hit his STO, the Evil, for the first time here in this match, it signaled the end for Okada. And that was huge.
Yes, and like you said, there's a difference between beating Tanahashi and at that moment, because he had was coming off of losing to Yano and things of that nature. You know, and Tanahashi's had a rough go of it early on in the tournament too. Tama Tonga beat Tanahashi in that tournament. So that right there,
right.
You know, that kind of eliminated that. Okada, he has been built up, like you said, as Superman, pretty much. And beating him really paid off for Evil. I will say this, though. I strongly believe, out of any person in this tournament, I sincerely hope that Evil does not lose right away after this win, and I don't think he will, for the record. But if he does, I think that would be a real blunder, in my opinion. But I think if he stays hot, he doesn't have to make the finals, but he should not lose, if that makes sense. But I really like what they've done. They need to keep his momentum going, because this win, it needs to mean something. It really does. It really needs to be worth something in the end. They can't just flush it all down the toilet so fast, in my opinion. So I do agree on that note, but I love this match. Regardless of future implications, I thought this was really awesome. And I can't say enough about Evil. He was the star of the show, the star of Block.
Yeah, great counters to the Rainmaker here, once with a headbutt, and then the STO being a perfect counter to the Rainmaker, as we've seen prior to this in the match Okada had with Shibata as well. So here again, the STO being a big move again.
And counter that to the leader of his faction. This win, this got a bigger reaction than any of Naito's matches, both in the arena or...
And you know, it really shows that you can do a lot if you just have this dominant guy on top of your promotion. The guy who's the champion, he's the champion, he shouldn't lose. That's just...
Exactly.
It's so simple. And they did it here. They protected Okada and his championship run. Okada is portrayed as Superman, but there is this one guy that's able to defeat him, and this guy was Evil, and it elevated him so much.
That's right, and I like what they did with Okada in this tournament. You know, like I said, he has been booked very auspiciously, but I think it paid off with this loss to Evil. I think it definitely paid off overall. And I'm always an advocate of dominant champions. I think that elevates the title, elevates an entire division, and I think we've seen it pay off already here, but I hope that they don't follow up with anything too crazy. And I also hope Okada does not lose to Suzuki the next night either. I think that would take away a bit from Evil's win, the same way Tonga winning took away from Sonata's win over Tanahashi. I hope that they keep Okada. They continue this dominant Okada streak until he loses the title. Against who that is, I don't know. But I also have to say, they've done a really strong job of, just in terms of booking the tournament, of adding intrigue, especially to Block B at this point, because you have that third factor in there in Evil now,
yes,
who is a legitimate contender. You know, it would not be insane for him to make the finals, especially after he beat the dominant champion. So I really like that. I really like what they've done with the book.
He has the tiebreaker over Okada right now.
Exactly.
Very interesting is that he does not have the tiebreaker over Omega, so that's a really interesting triangle situation here.
Omega would have to lose
He would have to lose.
Basically, Omega would have to lose the next match and then beat Okada, and then Evil can move on.
Right. That could be. So, Block B, with the addition of Evil into the mix of those being able to make it to the finals, really, 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 really got interesting here. But Block A continues to be basically a block that's revolving around Tanahashi and Naito, who broke out of the pack at the last Block A show. And here now on the show that happened earlier today in Act City Hamamatsu, drawing 3,567 fans, sold out house, again topping what they did last year at the G1 Climax in the same arena. They did 3,200, so over 300 people more in the building here for this show, headlined by Tanahashi vs. Ishii. And Naito and Tanahashi both moved to 12 points and are now on the top of the block. But let's go to a match that happened earlier here. Yuji Nagata got his first victory just the day after Satoshi Kojima got his first victory. Yuji Nagata was able to get his first win too over Zack Sabre Jr. in 15 minutes, 8 seconds with his backdrop hold finishing move. And Dylan, I don't know about you, but I loved everything about this match.
Oh, man, this is a really good match. You know, I'm definitely with you there. You're not going to get me criticizing these two going at it. You know, these guys are right up my alley.
Putting you on the spot here.
Yeah, these guys are right up my alley in the ring. I really liked what they did here. You know, and I also noted too, I don't know if you noted this in the, and I think we saw this in the previous match versus Ibushi as well. He started to use some of his older moves that he hasn't in a while. He used the drive screw at one point here against Ibushi. And he did a lot to the arm here with Zach. And I think it worked well into Zach's style. You know, yeah. And obviously, I think this was one of your most anticipated matches going into the tournament.
Yes.
Yeah.
I remember my tweet from back in June when they first announced the participants of the of the climax, where they didn't announce the blocks yet. I wanted Zack versus Yuji Nagata, and it totally delivered in my estimation. Great story here. On commentary, they told that Nagata had a 23-pound weight advantage over the Zack Sabre Jr., and that really played into the match because Zack was able to trap Nagata in a lot of different submission moves, and in some submission moves he won with early in the tournament, for example his armbar and the Manjigatame. But Nagata, being the heavier wrestler here in this match, was always able to make it to the ropes, was able to break the hold. So Sabre had to go back to different stuff, and he tried to go to striking. That striking wasn't as effective as he thought it would be. Also, maybe due to the weight difference here between those guys. And then Nagata was able to get the victory with his backdrop hold. So just a beautiful match right here.
Yeah, they really built to the backdrop hold as well. There was a great counter where he went for it and locked in the octopus stretch.
Yeah.
Earlier on, I thought was really cool. And my favorite part of this match had to be the finish where Nagata, he got a near fall off the backdrop and he got really fired up when it happened. And I love the way he fired up at the end and signaled like, no, this isn't like all the other times. And he hit his knee strike and then hit the backdrop again for the win, the backdrop driver for the win. And the crowd, again, continues to be fully behind Blue Justice here.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, there's no doubt about that. I do have to question, again, though, I have never liked the story thus far. And I don't like what this implies about Zach, that he just lost to the guy who lost to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Again, much like Sonata, I think this really solidifies exactly what I've said about Sabre all along and how they view him. I think this puts him right where I thought they had him, in their mind. And I don't know where the future goes for him, but I think he's going to do great at it in-ring. I think we should all curb our expectations in terms of how much
expectations have. I never thought that Zach would win the heavyweight title or anything like that. But I think still, with the victories he has over Makabe Tanahashi, he still is in a very good position here, and I think he's going to do well in New Japan.
And I think he's about where Elgin is.
Maybe.
And has been.
Yeah, maybe.
If not lower, due to that size that we talked about. I think that really comes into play.
The size factor is going to be an interesting part about his role in New Japan, because usually, of course, going back into history, New Japan has always been a promotion that has been divided into junior heavyweights and heavyweights, and Zack Sabre isn't a heavyweight. You can't portray
him. I think it brings an interesting story on the last day, though, is which one of us will have been right about his points. So will it be the 8 or the 10? It's going to be the big storyline of this G1 going into the last day.
You can of course portray him as a heavyweight, but he's just not a heavyweight. But I don't think that is as important as it has been in the past.
I don't think it matters to the fans as much, but to the leaders of this company,
I don't know.
You know. I think we've seen a lot of evidence with people in the past that it kind of does matter to them. You look at Prince Devitt's run. I think there's only so far you could go as at that size, in my opinion. And I'd be happy to be proven wrong because
right,
I really like Zach.
Yeah, but still, Devitt was a huge star, so he...
To the fans, it doesn't matter, which
is
exactly my point.
Right,
but
right,
I'm saying, I'm saying that in terms of titles and things like that, I think we're a ways away from even an IC title run. For Zach, but I think he's going to do good I think he'll do good in-ring, and if you keep your expectations in check, I think you could be happy. But if you expect big things, I don't think that's ever going to come in New Japan.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Maybe. But one minor gripe I had about this one is just minor detail of this match, but something that bothers me a lot when I see this move. Because when Zack had Yuji Nagata in the triangle choke, Zack was down. He had both shoulders were on the ground for like... It was a three count. But the ref just didn't call it. I don't like this.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. It's something and you did it again. You've done this earlier in the tournament too. I don't know if it was with Zach or someone else, but you mentioned this again before, and it's like, I don't even think about it, but that's my fault. I should notice it, because you are completely and unequivocally right on that point. I really wish they would pay more attention to the little details like that, you know. I think it would add a lot to these matches if you have him struggling for a pin and a submission at the same time.
Yeah.
But, you know, like you said, minor gripe overall, but I definitely feel where you're coming from on that one, Stuart.
Next up, we had Kota Ibushi going over Yoshihashi. Kota Ibushi at 10, Yoshihashi remains at 4, 14 minutes, 28 seconds. Kota Ibushi used the Kamigoe to defeat Yoshihashi, and I don't really know why they did that, because it's not like Yoshihashi has been knocking it out of the park in this tournament. He's at 4 points, one of the lowest ranked guys here, and he kicked out of the sit down last ride that Kota Ibushi was able to defeat guys with that are higher ranked than Yoshihashi before. So he used his new finisher that, of course, again got the victory here, but I don't know why that was. Match overall was good. Liked it more than the usual Yoshihashi matches I saw in this tournament. Maybe also due to the fact that Kota Ibushi was in here.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
You know, I like this match too. I don't think it was... I think Yoshihashi's had a pretty good tournament, actually. I've liked a couple of his matches. I really liked his match with Nagata and a couple of other matches. I think this was about the same level he's had. Maybe a little better than the match with Naito, I would say, and a little better than the match with Goto as well. But this was a good match, I would say, and I liked it. I really like what both men brought to the table. I think... like you said, that Kamigoe was a... I don't know why they did it in this match, other than it's just his finisher now, I think, is why they did it. And that was
maybe.
That was their thing. Yeah, it's just his finisher. But I'm like you. I really, like, when he did that to Tanahashi, I jumped out of my seat. I was like, whoa! Like, you know, don't... Like, this is a new move. It's really cool. Like, don't... but yeah, so it was a good match, but I kind of forget where you're coming from on this one. And it's not like Ibushi will be going anywhere in this tournament either, to be honest, as we saw later on. So there's definitely room, wiggle room here if they just wanted to get this out of the way and hit him with the last ride. But it didn't really take anything away from the match. I thought Hashi brought a lot of effort, as he always does, and Ibushi continues to be on his streak. And I will say this, the mathematical scientific equation that I've ranked wrestlers with in G1 has come to a dead tie before this show between Ibushi and Ishii.
Oh man.
Ishii jumped a little bit ahead with his match here that we'll talk about. So, but Ibushi's still in the running for that big number one spot. So he's still in the running. That is the storyline I'm looking forward to most in Block A, is who will be number one in my scientific rankings. But Ibushi's had a really awesome tournament. There's no doubt about that. I've actually really liked Yoshihashi in the tournament. He moved ahead of Goto, who was in the next match that we'll talk about.
Yeah. Yeah. He certainly has been good. It's just what we talked about when we talked about Goto versus Yoshihashi doesn't feel special or important. That's just...
Yeah, well, he's been eliminated forever.
Yeah, yeah, right.
He really needs that big win, just like we talked about last time. Yeah. If he could get a big win over somebody, I think he would really improve. I think that would improve his standing with both the fans and make his matches become more meaningful. But I've really enjoyed his matches with Nagata as well as Ishii. I know you didn't like that Ishii match as much as me.
Yeah, but I still don't know why I didn't like it. I don't know.
Because you hate Yoshihashi's hair, is what the problem is.
Not at all.
I think it,
not at all.
I like his hair too, I have to be honest. I've seen a lot of criticism for his hairstyle. Yeah. I have to turn it around on the listeners and the fans of New Japan here. The hair is totally fine, and he has a great wife, so do not judge him, because it's working for him.
Yeah, so next up was Tetsuya Naito defeating Togi Makabe, 11 minutes, 31 seconds, with the Destino.
No. It was Goto versus Fale.
All right, I don't want to sell Goto too short here. Sorry. Sorry.
Or Fale. Him short because this match wasn't that great and he lost.
The match was fine. Yeah.
Really, he's eliminated.
I really don't have a lot to say about this one, actually. What I have to say about this is Goto fell to the grenade and Fale didn't even have to go to the battle fall.
Yeah, they made sure to put that out there. So that was really nice. A really great way to eliminate him. as he always seems to do in this company, gets the geek treatment here. But I actually liked a lot of what they did early on, because it felt like something different for these Fale matches, which are always kind of one note. Where he went after Goto's legs, and I thought they kind of were getting into a good story, but they kind of just abandoned that.
Yeah, they dropped it.
I thought they were doing really good early on. I was like, man, this is one of Fale's best matches. And then it was like they kind of just went into a generic match, kind of, as the match went on. I liked their match last year a bit better than this one. It was not great at all, and Goto has definitely fallen down the rankings since I praised his performance earlier on. These last three matches have not been good. But I think that's a lot due to his opponents as well, because, you know, and we'll talk about Naito next, but not a great match. Goto eliminated here. I don't know what this was all about with the grenade, but whatever. It was a totally middling thing with two middling participants.
Yeah. Let's go to Naito and Makabe next. What did you think about this one?
Yeah, I don't know what you have to say about this match either.
Yeah,
to be honest with you.
That's why I'm tossing it to you.
yeah, because you were talking about you were talking about the last one, but you could have skipped this one too and been fine because it was a total Naito uninspired and Makabe does Makabe things match. I think if you have those expectations, you know, then you know what you're getting here. I thought this was actually worse than Bugoto and Fale, to be honest with you.
So, really?
No positive things. No, I didn't like it. Did you?
Yeah, well, I wouldn't necessarily say I liked it, but I didn't think it was worse than Fale versus Goto.
I don't think either were bad.
No.
I think this one was very good. And two Destinos again.
Yeah, let's just say these two matches were fine.
They were good, solid matches that you could skip if you're watching.
Yeah, nothing you have to go out of your way to see.
Exactly. I think they're kind of the same, to be honest with you. I just like the opening to Goto and Fale better than anything that Naito and Makabe did. That's the one thing that puts it over the top. Okay. But neither were great shows. Let's just say.
All right, let's put it over the top here with the main event of that show. Hiroshi Tanahashi beat Tomohiro Ishii 23 minutes 30 seconds. He won with the high fly flow, but man. This match, we talked about leg work, and this match was all about the leg work because both guys went for the leg of their opposition here, and it even went to the point that Ishii not only did dragon screws on Tanahashi, but he also used the Sasori Gatame, the scorpion deathlock that his trainer and mentor Riki Shoshu always used during his career, which was really an incredible tribute to his mentor, on Tanahashi. And Tanahashi sold it incredibly well, as did Tomohiro Ishii for the Texas Clubber hold that Hiroshi Tanahashi was going for. And the entire set of legwork that was done here was done so well. And we talked about both guys before. They're selling both when they are in the defense and when they are in the offense. It again played out here so well. And man, it was just a great, great main event here.
Yeah, you know, shortly before I saw this show, just a couple of hours ago as we're recording this, I watched the 1996 G1 final. I've been watching a lot of G1 finals, and Riki Choshu was in that match, he used that move to win. That was against Masahiro Chono, and Choshu's retirement tour of the G1. But that was a great G1 retirement story, I have to say, in contrast to the Nagata one this year. But this brought back visions of that when he used that Shoshu Sasori Gatame hold on Tanahashi. And Ishii is the king of this tournament, I feel like. He's had another awesome match in the main event with Tanahashi here. If he had won with that Sasori Gatame, this would have been like my favorite match in the tournament, probably. Not that it was bad or I have a problem with Tanahashi winning, but that just would have, that was just a great moment when he used that. You know, also known as the sharpshooter, if you're not. But this was a great match. Like you said, I don't have it. You said it really well. My only qualm a little bit is that I think it could have added a bit more if Ishii had won, because then we would have had like a lot of guys in play on the last day. But that's a very minor nitpick because we know who is planned for the finals, and it would probably be, I still think Naito has a very strong shot of going, but Tanahashi would be the obvious plan B. This eliminated everyone else besides Naito and Tanahashi going to the last day, but that's just a minor little tidbit I wanted to throw out there. But as a match, I thought this was a really strong match, definitely the top 5 to 7 matches of the tournament. I don't know where I'd rank it specifically, but it's going to be up there for sure. Definitely one of the better matches of the tournament. This one.
Yeah, I'm just looking here at the schedule for the climax. So we have one Block A show left.
And Block B.
Two Block B shows, that's right. So, yeah. So
yeah, I mean, the Naito Tanahashi are the only two left.
Yeah. I think they are. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
and who do you think is going to win?
Ibushi still has a... No, he doesn't.
he's eliminated.
That's true.
Eliminated. There's no one left.
Yeah, that's right.
If Ishii would have won, do you agree that if Ishii would have won, because Ibushi would also still be a play if Ishii would have won.
Yeah.
Do you like my idea of Ishii getting another big win?
Yes, I do. I do.
Yeah. Also, Goto would have beaten Fale and make that Goto and Ibushi match mean more. I don't mind it how it was, because like I said...
Yeah, but still, you know, I just wanted to pick up your point about minor grapes, and if you dissect these shows into the individual matches, there is, of course, there is criticism here and there, and there are matches that are not necessarily as great as others, but going into this show, both of us, we said that this weekend, this stretch of three shows was really, really great, and I would still stick to this opinion because
Well,
if you look at it overall, the G1 Climax has been incredibly strong this year, and these three shows, they told so many different stories, they had so many different matches, and have this tournament overall has so many different characters in it that it's just a joy to watch.
Yeah, you know, I've had a lot of fun watching it, like you said, even Block B, which I thought was mostly bad leading up to the last show, I thought they had a really great show, and they're on a stretch to have a really great closing stretch, which I think is really important to a lot of fans. And much like actual wrestling matches, the ending of the tournament can really tell the story of a block in the G1 Climax, and I really like where they're going. I think they've really recovered, even after one show, and made things really interesting, at least despite match quality qualms. Block A, I think, has had really tremendous match quality up and down. The block, like, Naito would be, like, my eighth best person, and he's had a really pretty okay tournament. You know, even someone like Yoshihashi, Goto, who have fallen off a little bit of late, had pretty strong moments in their tournament. And I only bring that up because I thought that was a minor gripe that was big enough to mention that if Ishii had won, a lot of people would have been in play for the last night.
Yeah.
And that would have been interesting, but like I said, the reason why I don't think it's a big deal, or I don't really care about it that much, is because we knew that Naito is probably going to win anyway. So they just kind of cut out all the middling factors. At most, best they could have had someone like last year with Goto, where it was like somebody could have came in and needed a draw to move on or something like that. That actually would have been a pretty funny story if Goto had needed a draw to move on again, and then Naito had won instead, or Tanahashi had won. But no real problems with that at all. Just something worth mentioning, I feel like.
Yeah, all right, man. So this was it for the stretch for these three shows. As we mentioned, we still have three block shows left and the finals here. So it's going to be still a very interesting stretch of four shows that we have left with the G1 Climax. I hope you all enjoyed this tournament so far. We certainly did. Yep. I want to go to two other points that are non-New Japan points for the first time in a while here on this show, because awesome. Because one of those is that the Fight TV app is now has now picked up All Japan Pro Wrestling shows. So if you go to fight.tv and on the top right type in AJPW, you will see that Fight TV has added two shows from Curtain Hall from this year. The first Curtain Hall show from, I think, what was the date of that show? Either January 2nd or 3rd, I'm not sure right now. And the February Curtain Hall show, the Junior Battle of Glory show. You can now go to fight.tv and you can watch these shows for absolutely for free. If you type in your email address, you will be able to watch the first two Curricon All shows that All Japan did this year. And this, Dylan, this is really a big deal for All Japan, and this is a big deal for a lot of Japanese wrestling fans.
Yeah, you know, it's great that they're getting this opportunity on Fight app, the Fight TV app. You know, All Japan has had a lot of great moments over the past couple of years. I can't wait till we talk about them more after this G1 finished, because I actually have a lot of things to say about them this year. But this app is a great, great move strategically for them. Opens up a lot of new eyeballs potentially for the All Japan product. And I'm really interested to see how this plays out and how valuable it turns out to be for them. I think they've gotten off to a pretty good start uploading these free shows.
Yep.
And from now on, I believe every big show that they have will be for a $5 price. You can buy the shows from there, every big show they have going forward. So that should be pretty cool. You can watch them and unlimited replays and all that.
Right.
I think All Japan's a product that you really should check out. It's one of my favorite companies. Despite what they've done the past couple of months, I really enjoy their product. I really enjoy their roster. They have a ton of guys I like, and it's one of the easiest companies to follow in terms of storylines, and it's very, how should I describe this? It's very simplistic. There's not a lot of craziness in the main events or anything like that. You're never going to get like a Suzuki-gun main event, except when Suzuki-gun actually comes in, probably, later on, which I'm not too pleased about. But for the most part, these shows, like the ones they've uploaded for free, are really solid watches throughout, and you can really check them out, and I'd love to see if anybody tries out this app and sees how the shows look and how they stream, and if you enjoy the app and the setup they've done, because some of these streaming apps are better than others. You know, you don't want a flow slam situation with something where how it's organized and how things are set up in the app. You know, so I hope that they take good care of it and they do a good job. I think they will. I believe Global Force used this for the Tokyo Dome show they did.
Yeah.
I'm not entirely sure,
but maybe, yeah.
I remember hearing that name before. I know I've heard that name before, the Fight TV app. So I believe that was it, and everything seemed to work fine there. So if you do, let me know on Twitter. Let us both know how it goes for Fight. And I'm definitely going to be checking in when they have the next big show for the $5. I have no problem supporting All Japan that way. And I can't wait to see how this all turns out. I hope it leads to more eyes and more visibility for the company. That's what I'm really hoping for, because I really hope that they deserve it, particularly for my boy Miyahara, as always, but my favorite wrestler besides him.
Exactly, yes. It's a great opportunity for All Japan Pro Wrestling. And something else that unwound this weekend was Atsushi Onita coming to the United States and doing a six-man tag match. I don't want to talk about the show or the show itself because I haven't seen the show. One thing I just want to mention is that friend of the show, Brett, who is on Twitter at BahuFMW, I saw on his Twitter that he was able to do a sit-down interview with Atsushi Onita for an upcoming Onita documentary. That, my man, is very interesting.
Yeah, that's awesome. I can't wait to see what Onita's got to say, what questions Brett asked him. You know, he is the foremost expert on anything FMW.
Yep.
And I know I've read, and he has an excellent, I don't want to say, a biography of FMW on his website that tells you all sorts of great information, all sorts of behind-the-scenes things. And I know from reading that he has very similar opinions on Onita to me. So I'm interested to see what he asked about him and his time in FMW and all sorts of questions. So I think that's really cool.
Definitely. The website you mentioned is fmwwrestling.us. So very interesting website there as well. And one more point I want to mention. When the G1 Climax is over, Stardom's 5-star Grand Prix starts, and you will of course be able to catch all these matches on stardom-world.com. We have two blocks, the red block and the blue block. I think each block consisting of 8 wrestlers, if I'm not mistaken. So for the red block, we have Mayu Iwatani, Viper, Hana Kimura, Yokobito, Hiromi Mimura, Kagetsu, Chris Wolf, and Saya Brookside. Have I pronounced that right?
Yes, those are 8 names as well. So good job.
And so, going to the blue block, Io Shirai, who made her return recently. We have Jungle Kiona, Tony Storm, Mandy Leon, Hasuki, Kaylee Ray, Konami, and either Natsuko Tora or Tam Nakano. Dylan, briefly, what do you think about this tournament?
There are some good names in there, some interesting people they brought in. And Io coming back was a big deal in a lot of ways. You know, coming back from her injury, she seems to be okay. There's a lot of speculation on her, where she would be going in the future. Her WWE offer is well publicized. Some people named whose initials may be DM have stated that she agreed to a contract once. But apparently things have fallen south in terms of Io's status with WWE, and she's back with Stardom. Even when she left, she said she would be coming back, and the rare case of a wrestler's words being actually believable as she returns to Stardom yet again in this tournament. I will say this, though. Injury aside, I'm not necessarily worried about the injury or anything about Stardom. I have no negative comments on that at all in terms of her wrestling again. I think if she's able and wants to and they want her, then she should absolutely wrestle in this tournament and come back for Stardom. I do worry what this means for Mayu's reign as ace, as she just got it. You know, she just beat Io finally, had that big story, and now Io's coming back, gets all this spotlight again, and I think she has to be the favorite of this tournament right now, as it is. The natural story is her winning over someone like Kagetsu, who I think is a great wrestler, very, very underrated in a lot of ways. But I think it's a really interesting tournament up and down. The foreigners, I continue to not be a super big fan of. Brookside has not lit my world on fire, to say the least. And Leon, there's a very certain type of wrestler that they bring in for foreigners, and it's not necessarily my cup of tea, to say the least. But I think they're going to be in there with some solid pros, and they should get the best out of them. And I'm hoping for the best of this tournament. I have to say, my expectations are very optimistic, actually, overall for Stardom. I think they've actually turned things around in a certain ways. And someone, I have to say, not necessarily a dark horse to win the tournament, but somebody I think is going to have a breakout 5-star Grand Prix is Konami. I expect her to have a great tournament with a lot of people. I'm a really big fan of hers right now, and I think she's going to really open a lot of people's eyes that may not know her as well, but going into this, if they just want to check out the tournament, I think she is going to stand out as one of the top performers of the tournament. So bank on that right now.
Yeah, right. So there is a qualifying match August 13 in Curricon Hall between Natsuko Tora and Tam Nakano. That's a qualifying match for the blue block. The tournament itself starts on August 19 and goes on until September 18, the finals being in Curricon Hall. And as I said, you'll be able to catch that at stardom-world.com. And for us, I think that has been it. For this
no, it
episode?
Has not been it.
Oh, it has
no,
not been it.
No,
oh,
it has not
oh,
been it.
Oh, interruption from Dylan here, right here.
Yeah, that's right. We have an interruption because I always keep my promises.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Yeah.
and you almost did it again, but I, the one who loves the listeners, stepped in again. So I think you know where I'm going with this.
I know.
We have to get to our questions that we have.
Yes.
We must answer every question ever asked on this show.
Let me quickly pull out my emails here. I'm so sorry, Nick, for forgetting that, but at least Dylan is here for the save.
I have no idea what these questions are, by the way. So this is your favorite move to blindside me. So if anything bad is in these questions, you may add them in as well. You may add a very uncomfortable question.
The email says, "Dear Dylan, dear Strigger, as always, thanks a lot for answering my last set of questions a few months ago on the show. Today, Swiss National Day, and actually this email was already sent on August 1st, I finally found some time to give you guys some new questions and opinions of mine about New Japan and the G1 Climax. First one is, considering that they have been booking him exactly the same as Nagata so far, could this also be Kojima's final G1, although they didn't announce it? Dylan, what do you think?
I think it would mean a lot more if they did announce it, but it really is strange why they booked him exactly the same as Nagata. I don't really understand that, but I don't think it's his last tournament. My gut is telling me it's not, because I think he's so associated with Tenzan, that would be like throwing away a perfectly good story for no reason if they did that. He doesn't mean as much to New Japan as someone like Nagata or Tenzan.
Yeah.
He left, and he was gone for a long time. There's no question about that.
And you know, but okay, yeah. There's a but, okay.
Yeah, I would say, but even when he was gone, he won this tournament. Or did he win? No, he won the title. He won the title over Tenzan.
Yeah, he was the quadruple crown champion.
Yes, exactly. He was the first one to hold both titles at the same time. Yes, the quadruple crown. But hold both the triple crown and the IWGP title at the same time. And when he came back, it was a big deal. When he won the G1 in 2010, mm-hmm. and got the Tokyo Dome main event, when he came back, that was a really big deal. So I think he means enough to warrant that. But at the same time, I also understand that he doesn't mean as much as Nagata or Tenzan does. So if they wanted to go that route, I would not surprise me. I just don't foresee personally.
Yeah, I'm not so sure if there is any more room for guys like Nagata or Kojima in next year's tournament.
Yeah,
this tournament is so stacked this year with so many great names. Maybe it's Kojima's last one. Yeah, maybe it is.
My problem with that is Nagata and Tonga will not be in next year's tournament. So that's two spots right there that they have.
That's true, yeah.
And who are they bringing in? Who would be better than Kojima on this roster, in theory, that was not in this year?
Maybe.
I don't think so either.
not sure. But maybe this is the last. Maybe next year, maybe Kojima comes back and says, okay, I'm not having 2 points in my last G1 Climax tournament. I want at least a decent run. And he comes back next year.
That's worth 2 points, you know? if they do that, but no, that would be fine. It would be kind of silly. Like they keep having these retirements. I think there's only so far they can go. But luckily, they're running out of people that can reasonably retire and it mean anything.
Yeah.
So I think he would probably be the end of the line with these tournaments, unless you foresee Nakanishi coming back.
I was just gonna say.
Yeah. One last run for Nakanishi. Who also had one of the worst G1 finals, by the way. No offense to the big man.
Yeah.
But if he comes back, that would be something. But I do think that Kojima's got at least one more in him. But the time's running out, but I don't think there's anybody on the roster that can take his space in the tournament reasonably at this point.
Next question is, did you guys also notice that there doesn't seem to be that many injuries on the wrestlers that far into the tournament than in previous years? I remember many G1s where almost the entire roster were having a shoulder taped or something like that after around about 5 tournament matches. Is this just luck, or could the reason for this actually be that two very stiff hitters in Shibata and Honma are absent from this year's tournament. First of all, before answering the question, I want to bring up something that we didn't talk about when we reviewed this show from today. Okada had his neck taped. And in my opinion, that put over Evil's victory over Okada even more.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was a great touch for the STO. I don't buy that at all about Shibata and Honma having that big of an effect. You know, I just think, like, stuff happens sometimes, and sometimes it doesn't, you know? Like, that's really where I take it. I don't think there's really any change. And people are hurting on this tour. It's not like, there's been no big injuries, but was there an injury last year that was in the G1 that where someone missed matches?
Last year's tournament.
I don't think there was. The year with the Noah guys.
Yeah, I don't think there was. 2015, we had Nakamura's elbow.
Yeah, I remember that.
Goto
had a year where he missed a bunch of matches.
I think he had a broken chin bone.
Jaw. Yeah. Something in his face. Tanahashi slapped that knocked his bone loose.
Same tournament had Hiroyoshi Tenzan missing. Right. So there haven't been a lot of injuries, and I'm very, very happy about that. I can't say anything about how hard the guys are working, because you can only tell that if you're in the ring with them, I guess.
Yeah, I think everybody's worked pretty hard. I think the match quality's been high.
Yeah.
You know, and there's been injuries here and there. We saw that with Evil in this match with Omega.
And Evil not only was knocked out, but he also had this giant bruise on his left arm.
Yeah, that's true. Evil's taking some punishment. Yoshihashi has... last year he was all taped up by the end. I think maybe that's what's missing. People need to be taped up more. Like, and even if it's not injured, that's what I would do. By the sixth match, even if I was feeling 100%, I'd be wearing the arm sleeve like Tanahashi and tape up my other shoulder. You know, maybe that could help. But I don't read into Honma and Shibata's disappearance from tournament.
Hey,
to have that,
you can never have enough tape.
That's what I would say. Tape is beautiful. It's a beautiful thing, especially in wrestling, especially with non-existent injuries.
Then I think Nick gives an opinion here. Considering your discussion about interferences, I really don't like interferences at all in Pro Wrestling. They don't add anything to me and are just a parody of the American style of wrestling. However, isn't there a new phenomenon in New Japan? This isn't a new phenomenon in New Japan Pro Wrestling. I remember when I started to watch New Japan in 2007 that there was GBH interfering in some major matches for their leader Makabe. For example, the 2008 G1 semifinal against Tanahashi. After all these years, I stopped getting angry about it and don't feel bothered by most of the interferences. I just mostly ignore them. Maybe this strategy would help Dylan too, because that way you're still able to enjoy great matches. For example, just like Striga enjoyed Suzuki versus Omega a lot.
That wasn't a great match, though. So that would be my comment. It helps me not enjoy crappy matches. So maybe the Big Japan match, I kind of think I can understand where you're coming from. That maybe I was a little too hard on it. That one, though. Not the Omega one, though. And it goes way back from 2007. You're talking about it, the original UWF feud in the 80s. There were 80s ProRes, lots of interference.
Yes.
And lots of stupid things.
Yep, definitely.
So this is by no means anything new, but that's a big reason why I didn't like New Japan as much as All Japan in the 90s when a lot of stupid stuff was going on there. No offense to Masahiro Chono and NWO Japan, but... You know,
offense to NWO Japan. Of course.
Well, of course, no offense. They didn't get good until Team 2000. Okay? Yeah. That's when things turned around. But that's why I liked All Japan Heavyweights a lot better than New Japan Heavyweights. I didn't like the New Japan Heavyweights. I thought they weren't as good as a lot of people do, but I liked the Juniors a lot better in New Japan. And the turn of the century, like you said, this continued, in a match. I very much remember a match that I otherwise loved, which was a match between Yuji Nagata and Kazunari Murakami in 2002, which was an amazing match. But even that match had interference from the Makai Club and stuff of that nature back then. So no, not absolutely not a new phenomenon. But if it was bad then, I don't understand why I should like something that I think sucks. Like or why how that would help me? Because I think you had a perfect email until that last part. I have to say that because that's exactly how I feel. I don't think it has any place in wrestling.
Well,
in my opinion,
for the Suzuki versus Omega match, I didn't ignore the interference. That's not the point that I made. I
didn't say that.
No. It's just here what Nick says about interference, ignoring interference. I didn't ignore the interference. I thought it played into the match story overall, so that's why I wasn't bothered by it, because I thought it added to the match. And that's just... In general, I'm not a fan of interference as well, but in this case, I didn't mind it. Let's just say it.
Well,
one more point here. This year's G1 has been awesome so far. Would you guys agree that it already surpassed G1 26? Everyone is really delivering, in my opinion. Even players like Makabe and Yano are having better performances than in the previous years. My favorite match has been Big Mike versus Okada.
That was a good match. I think Block A has been the best of any of the blocks of the G1 tournament of the past few years since we've seen it, the whole tournaments pretty much. I think that's been my favorite block, just in terms of pure, and that's what I go for mostly, is more match quality than anything else. And I think they've had the best one overall. I think story-wise, I actually really liked Block B last year, because we had the great Yoshihashi story. Mm-hmm. Omega was a super surprise winner. Big Mike stood out too. And you had the Noah guys as well in the tournament that added a fresh element throughout. People like Nakajima and Marufuji added a lot. And Goto was another surprise in Block A. And I really liked the surprise element of the winners. I actually picked Goto, but I think for a lot of people it was a surprise. And this year, I think Block B, I think it remains to be seen if this one truly is the best one of all of them, because I really haven't liked Block B a whole lot. I've liked a select few of their matches, but to me, the problem is every show there's a Yano match, which I don't really like, Suzuki match, which I definitely don't like, Tonga match, which is okay, but you kind of know what you're getting, and Omega doesn't connect with me in the way he does with a lot of people, and even Sonata is kind of bland, but I kind of like his work as well. But so Block B to me has been very up and down, but I think we're going to see these next few shows. I think Block B is primed for a big step up, and if they can do that, and I don't want to say that a surprise would automatically make it better, but I really thought Naito would make the finals, and Block B was a little up in the air, so really anybody could be good on that end, but I think it remains to be seen, but it's definitely in the running for one of the best G1s, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I especially like Block A.
I think so, too. It's in a running for the best G1 climax in a lot of years.
Yep.
And it's been great both in the ring when it just comes to the pure wrestling aspect and also the storytelling aspect of the tournament. If I look at last year's tournament, we had Hiroyoshi Tenzan in Block A. I don't want to take away anything from Tenzan, but he was not in his best... He was not at his best level in this tournament.
And he broke down late, real bad.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. Otherwise, we had mostly same guys. We had Honma and Shibata in Block B. But still, overall, I would say this one is pretty great. And a point I made about this tournament before was also that they care a lot more about the undercard matches than they did in previous years. And that's just something that puts it over the top from it. Like you, I would just see and wait how it all plays out in the end.
Yeah, let's remember this question when we do our show after the final. I think we can revisit this topic.
Yeah,
and when we see the winner and how everything turns out.
That's your job then, to remember this question.
okay, I'll make sure to note it down. But I would probably ask that anyway, even on my own. So, Nick, if I secretly take credit for your question, or if Striga does, we make sure to tweet us or something, so we give you
something. Nick says, no Twitter, but first-time listener, but listener from the very first show on, so thank you for that, to stick with us guys here from the first show on until this show right here.
Nick, you're the man for listening to all the shows. Really enjoy that. Keep sending us emails if you want us to answer your questions. I'll make sure that we do.
All right. So I guess that's been it, right?
Yep.
That's been it. Okay. So if you want to get into interaction with us, you can do that on Twitter. I am at Striga, STRIGGA, and Dylan is on the Twitter machine as well.
That's right. Catch me at Dylan Zero Sky, talking about G1 Climax, and all sorts of other Japanese wrestling. We've been focused on the New Japan of late, and as the tournament starts to wind down, we're getting more into other things like Stardom. I talked about Onita. I will say, I think you neglected to mention Onita's shirts that he's promoting as well for FMW and his shirts as well. You got to check those out. I'm sure there's a picture on there, probably on your Twitter account, to be honest with you. About his Onita shirts that he's got. You gotta give those a look. But yeah, we'll talk about anything wrestling-wise, as well as Lucha. Check out my other show, Lucha Talk. It's gonna be on probably either Tuesday or late Tuesday, early Wednesdays. Usually we're gonna talk about a big Apuestas match that happened this Friday. And so everybody give that a listen to, too. And hope you've all enjoyed the G1 coverage. I've really enjoyed doing it with my main man, Striga, as well.
Yes, I enjoyed this very much, too. We've covered all shows so far. Let's see how we will be able to cover the final days of the tournament. One thing, if you want to send an email, just as Nick did, the email address is japan@mlw.com. That's japan@mlw.com. And so I want to thank you all for listening to this show. This has been it for the Eastern Lariat for this time. Thank you at
Kansha Sayana.
This is the MLW Radio Network.